to Dan Lestico. Please go ahead, sir.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone, or good morning for those of you in the Midwest. This is Dan Lestico from Fuels America Coalition. We have on the line with us Brent Erickson, who is Executive Vice President for the Industrial and Environmental Section of BIO, and as well as Steve Hartig, the General Manager for Licensing of POET DSM, and John Doggett, the Vice President for Public Policy of the National Corn Growers Association. They'll each make some brief remarks, and then we'll take your questions. Go ahead. You want to start things off, Brent.
Thanks very much, Dan. Good morning, everybody. Good afternoon. As you all probably know, the Obama administration is now in the final stages of approving a RFS proposal that may actually gut the bipartisan renewable fuel standard, thus upending years of policy stability and market certainty that has until this point been driving investment in America's advanced biofuel industry, as demonstrated by the recent opening of the POET DSM Project Liberty Cellulosic Ethanol Facility in Emmitsburg, Iowa, which I'd like to congratulate Steve Hartig on. The ongoing delay in releasing the RFS rule has also sent strong signals to the market that have undercut advanced biofuels use for the year and chilled new investments in advanced biofuels and distribution infrastructure. The EPA proposal does two things wrong, we believe. First, it lowers the overall targets for renewable fuel use from year to year, which simply means that we have less advanced biofuel in our gasoline supply and a higher percentage of foreign oil. It means more oil from overseas and fewer jobs at home. But the second thing is actually our much larger concern. EPA's proposal fundamentally changes the way renewable fuel targets are calculated. This is the methodology issue that we like to call it. Instead of basing it on our industry's capacity to produce fuel, which is what the law requires and which has been done heretofore, EPA has invented a new methodology based on whether or not the oil industry wants to offer renewable fuels to consumers, and it's based on the consumption of gasoline versus the production of biofuels. Since the oil industry largely controls that infrastructure through its gasoline station distribution contracts, it gives them basically a veto power over the growth in market share for renewable fuels. The methodology would dampen, this new methodology they're proposing, would dampen investment in advanced biofuels for years to come, and without policy stability and market certainty over the multiple years, which is what the RFS was designed to provide, no one will make the additional investments in advanced biofuels necessary to reach our goals of greater energy security and more renewable energy. The Department of Energy recently noted that we need 1,000 more biorefineries built around the United States, like POET DSM's Project Liberty. I think if the rule goes forward as it was proposed, we're not going to see those new plants built and those new jobs created and those new fuels getting into the supply. In recent days, EPA Administrator McCarthy has said publicly that they expect the targets for renewable fuel to be raised on the grounds that gasoline consumption is projected to be a little higher than they previously thought. That's actually, I think, a troubling statement. While we are obviously pleased they want to raise the number somewhat, we actually found those comments to be disappointing. They are basically signaling that they are sticking with the flawed methodology that guarantees the oil industry can control 90% of the fuel market. The renewable fuel standard is supposed to push us over the blend wall, which really is an artificial creation of the oil industry anyway. It's not meant to codify the blend wall, and that's what this proposed rule would do if it's left unchanged. The administration's approach to the policy is designed to avoid going over it. The Congress, when they wrote the law, intended this to be a game-changing law. It was meant to overcome the blend wall and grow the inclusion of renewable fuels into a much greater quantity than just the 10%. So it's very disappointing, and we hope that cooler heads will prevail in the administration, and this methodology will go back to the one that they've used in previous years. With that, I'll conclude and turn it over to Steve Hartig.
Hi, this is Steve Hartig, and good morning, good afternoon. Appreciate all of you being here. Today and right now is really a pivotal moment for the biofuels industry, and in particular the advanced biofuels industry where we're focusing. Four commercial-scale cellulosic biorefineries are coming online this year, which is a culmination of years of development and billions of dollars of money of private investment that we put into this. Just last week, POET DSM opened one of those four commercial-scale biorefineries where we're producing fuel from corn cobs, corn stalks, and other agricultural residues. Our facility in Emmitsburg, Iowa, will produce up to 25 million gallons of clean, renewable American fuel and help open the door for an entirely new American industry based on groundbreaking technology. The grand opening was a great event with attendees from around the world. As we indicated at the opening, cellulosic biofuels are not a fantasy anymore, but instead clearly a reality. And not only does this open up new economic opportunities for rural communities, but cellulosic ethanol represents a reduction in greenhouse gas emissions of 60% or more compared to oil. But, as Brent said, the administration's proposal to change the methodology and lower the targets of renewable fuel standard has frozen investment in cellulosic ethanol and put our energy security and rural economies at risk. It's no coincidence that since the administration's proposal was announced, not one of the four companies has announced plans to build or license technology for a cellulosic ethanol plant in the United States. This is the worst time to make changes, so we're now proving the technology at scale and moving towards a commercial rollout. That's because the administration's proposal and comments like those made recently by Administrator McCarthy will mean the renewable fuels industry won't be allowed to grow beyond 10% of the market, which is basically the volume available today in grain-based ethanol. If the market is going to shrink or remain flat, then that's not an attractive environment for investments. When you tell us that our fate will be controlled by our competitors in the oil industry rather than by consumers in the marketplace, that's very discouraging to U.S. investors that are quite likely to look at other better opportunities. If the administration were to follow through on its proposal, it would be driving us, the cellulosic industry they once championed, overseas to Asia, Europe, and South America. The future of America's environment and energy independence depends on our ability to stand up to the oil interests that want to keep us hooked on more expensive, more polluting foreign fossil fuels. We're making our case directly to the White House and to the EPA. We're also continuing to make our case to the American people. And that's why today we're releasing a full-page advertisement that will run in next weekend's edition of USA Today. That ad makes the point quite forcefully that the president is undermining his own priorities, hurting an industry that he himself has championed. And now we'll pass it on to John Doggett.
John, before John starts, I just wanted to remind folks that if you want to go ahead and get yourself in the queue for questions, you press star 1 on your keypad, and that'll get you into the questions queue, and we'll begin that right after John makes his remarks. Go ahead, John.
Okay, and thank you. And again, my name is John Doggett. I'm Vice President of Public Policy for the National Corn Growers Association. You know, our farmers, our family farmers, are about, within the next couple of weeks, are going to be harvesting the largest corn crop ever produced. It will be the fifth record crop that we've had in the last 12 years. Our growers are using technologies that were unimaginable even 10, 15, 20 years ago. When the energy bill was passed in 2008, there was a challenge to the corn industry, produce the corn, and we have produced the corn. One of the sides to this record crop, though, is that we've produced too much corn, and we are selling corn today at about 35% of what we did just a couple of years ago, certainly below the price of production for a lot of our growers. We are a nickel away from having corn prices in central Iowa with a number 2 in front of it. That's $2 and some odd cents There are places in the Midwest where we're not moving corn because of the rail issues, where corn is a nickel away from trading under $2 a bushel. And, you know, we were talking $6, $7, $8 corn not that many years ago. The ethanol industry, the RFS, has revitalized rural America. And when that happened, America's corn farmers answered the call, and they're producing the corn for food, fuel, fiber, and feed. And so we've done our part. We're going to continue to do our part. The folks that haven't done their part are the folks in the oil industry. They knew since 2008 that they were obligated parties. They continue to push back on things like E85. They don't allow E85 pumps under the canopy. They have pushed back with all of their might on E15. They are refusing to put in blender pumps, and all the while knowing that they were going to be, at some point, obligated to these statutory numbers. So, again and again, they've pushed back on the things they needed to do to meet the mandate passed by the legislation. So what they are like is like kids that kill their parents and then throw themselves at the mercy of the court because they're an orphan. You know, we just have to wonder why they're doing that when everybody else involved in this part of the fuels industry is doing their part. So with that, Dan, I turn it back to you.
Okay, thanks, John. We're going to go to our first question from Aisha Resko from Reuters. Go ahead, Aisha.
I don't know if you, well, this, you guys know about the API call that was earlier. So, and they talked about, they said the administration is playing politics with this, with the RFS rule, and when they talk about increasing the numbers, that they're really just trying to help, I guess, Bruce Braley in Iowa. I wanted to get your reaction to that, and then I also just wanted to know if you got, if, you know, there's a big problem with the methodology. You don't want them to base it on gasoline demand, but it doesn't seem like EPA is going to, you know, restore the targets to where they are in the federal mandate. So I was wondering, is there any other thing that they can use to justify a cut other than gasoline demand?
This is John Doggett. Let me answer the second question, and that is there anything that they can, you know, the EPA can do to justify a lower number? And we don't think so. I mean, the oil industry has gone to EPA over and over again, and they have used their political power, which is significantly larger than the political power of the ethanol industry or the corn industry. But they've gone to EPA and said that they can't because the infrastructure is there or they're not able to mix that much fuel. They have the ability to meet this mandate. It would not take very much for them to do it. So I don't know what argument EPA could come up with unless it's some sort of contrived argument presented by the oil industry.
And the issue of the politics, is EPA playing politics? Or the Obama administration trying to influence the Iowa race, do you think?
We hope they do. I mean, you know, politics are being played on this issue by both sides and all in not just the Iowa senatorial race. It's being played all over by all sides, and I don't think anybody ought to be surprised that politics are being played on this issue. We're shocked that there's gambling going on in this establishment.
Yeah, this is Brent Erickson. You know, this has been a David and Goliath struggle all along, and the biofuels industry is David, and we've been struggling against this Goliath oil industry that has spent millions and millions of dollars on ads and other things. And it's curious why EPA, after years of doing one thing, would all of a sudden switch sides and decide that Goliath needs to be helped. It's just really curious.
All right. Our next question will be from Amanda from Greenwire.
Hey there. Thanks for taking my question. At this point, when do you see the final rule coming out? And have any of you met with OMB yet about it, or do you have any plans to meet with OMB about it?
This is Brent. Yeah, I think there is a lot of speculation on when the rule will come out. I don't know that we have any
better information than anybody else, so I think it's impossible to say. Sooner would be better than later. We hope they do the right thing, and the more they dither, the more it hurts the biofuels industry.
Okay, we're going to move to our next question here in just a moment, but just a reminder that to get into the question queue, press star 1 on your keypad, and we'll take the next question from Kevin with Opus. Go ahead, Kevin.
Good afternoon, and thanks for setting up this call. Up until now, the issue it hasn't been an issue. The EPA's rules about biofuel mandates haven't really been an issue for the cellulosic sector because you guys haven't produced anywhere near what had been set aside in the legislation. And even looking out this year and next year, it seems like the legislation has ample room for anything that this industry can realistically produce. I'm wondering if you guys could talk about projecting out at what point you think you're going to run into this problem you're talking about. Because the problem you're talking about is as there's more and more cellulosic ethanol and there's conventional ethanol, they're going to wind up fighting for the same limited market space. So you want that you want that demand to be increased. When are we going to hit that inflection point?
This is Steve Hardig. I'll pick that up. I mean, I think the issue is not in, the volume mandate for the cellulosic ethanol has lots of room ahead, and we're clearly just growing. So that's not really the issue. The issue is to find, one, it's all the uncertainty around the RFS, and where is it going to be, what's it going to go, and then when you look at investors wanting to invest large sums of money in future plants, that makes them hesitate. And then just what it does, ethanol, corn ethanol, and cellulosic ethanol are linked. And if every gallon of cellulosic ethanol has to push out a gallon of corn ethanol, that puts a lot of internal pressure, and a lot of the companies are similar companies. So it just, if you're trying to sell a new product, a new innovative product into a shrinking market, it doesn't have a good value proposition.
Sure. And do you have any sense of when this type of really direct competition of the two types of ethanol might...
Well, you see it. I think you'll see it in the coming, as I said in my statements. I mean, right now, as we look at the value proposition for cellulosic ethanol, it's more attractive in other countries than the U.S. So it doesn't impact necessarily the plants that ourselves or DuPont and Abengoa are building, but when we look at the next plants, it absolutely is impacting those.
Okay, thanks. And are there, how do existing conventional ethanol plants, it seems to me they would be prime candidates, right, for making, for adding cellulosic capacity. So are they the ones that are really the worst affected by what EPA is doing?
Sure. I mean, our targets, our cellulosic ethanol plant is next door to a POET corn ethanol plant, and that's been our target is to co-locate with existing with ethanol plants. And if you're looking at somebody that's in the corn ethanol business, and you ask them to invest in cellulosic ethanol business, which is hurting their main business, that doesn't seem very attractive to them.
All right. Again, we will. We have a couple more minutes for questions. If folks want to press star 1 to dial in for a question, we'll take our next question from Tim from the Hill. Go ahead, Tim.
Hey guys, thanks for taking my question. One thing I wanted to ask you about was, can you talk more about what this means for corn farmers out in the Midwest and especially in Iowa? How important is the renewable fuel standard out there and the demand for ethanol? I know you mentioned it a little bit earlier, but I just wondered if you could go into more detail about how important it is for families out there and farmers and the community, economically speaking.
This is John Doggett. Obviously our growers that had corn to sell at, the brief time it was $8, they did quite well, as they did at $7 and $6. But, we're now talking about prices available on the market today being below the price of production. And, they've had some good times, but they can, they can weather tough times because they've had some good times here. But, you know, it is a constant struggle to get young people back to the farm. And, you know, our folks want to have their kids have the opportunity to come back to the family farm. But if we again and again and again find ourselves at the mercy of policies that can be changed for all the wrong reasons and disrupt the market for our corn, folks get nervous about that. You know, we know that prices are going to go low because we've had a huge crop, but what's going to happen to the next crop and the next crop and the next crop? We're looking for a diversity of places to sell our product, both domestically and overseas. Our largest consumer is still the livestock industry and probably will be for quite some time. But the ethanol industry has provided markets for corn in rural areas. They have located in rural areas. They've provided jobs and economic development in rural areas. It's allowed small communities to take the plywood off the storefronts.
But when you're talking about the prices, you know, going down from 8 to 6, wouldn't the price go down more the more that you're producing, or does it go up? I was thinking that the price, you know, if you're producing more for, say, the renewable fuel standard, I was thinking the price would go down, but maybe I have my economics backwards there.
Well,
I'm just wondering how the renewable fuel standard affects the price.
Well, it will a couple ways. One, will the plants be able to run at maximum production? And it's all about how much corn are you going to grind for ethanol? How much corn is going to go to the livestock industry, which is at this point fairly flat. But, you know, we want to make sure that there's demand there that supports the price from falling further. And right now, the marketplace, there's a lot of uncertainty in the marketplace in face of a crop that's a record crop. And so that's going to drive prices down. If we had some certainty that we were going to go back to what was originally intended and that we did have a commitment to renewable fuels, I think you'll see some stability in the grain markets. I don't think anybody's looking for this decision to make some huge, drastic upward adjustment on corn prices. But we do need to have some certainty so that we can market this year's crop and we can plan for next year's crop.
All right, we do have two more questions in the queue. We'll start with Orlin Love from Cedar Rapids Gazette.
My question is for John, too, kind of following up on the last discussion there. John, do you think that all the discussion of the renewable fuel standard and the indications that it will be lowered have already been factored into the corn prices we're seeing today, which, as you mentioned, could soon start showing twos instead of threes in the first number?
Well, I'm not an economist, and I don't ever try to pretend I am. This obviously has it already been factored into the price? I'm not sure. You'd have to ask folks that are in central Iowa buying and selling corn. I mean, I'm looking at the price, I think, for October corn in central Iowa this morning was a couple cents over $3. How much of that price was figured around this policy? I'm not sure. It depends on if the folks buying and selling corn are anticipating that the number's going to go up and how much they anticipate it will go up.
Thanks, John. And our final question will come from John Harsh at AgriPulse.
Well, once again, John, following up on what you said earlier about the administration changing its policies for, quote, all the wrong reasons. What are the underlying reasons why the administration seems to have changed its renewable fuels policies?
Well, I think what has been explained to us is that they have a concern that that staying with the statutory amounts would cause fuel prices to go up. We think that's we believe that's wrong, and we've advocated to the folks in the administration that is not a good reason to move these numbers lower. They are concerned about high-priced RINs, You know, and there was quite a bit of volatility in the RIN market a couple years ago. You know, high RIN prices do force the petroleum industry to actually find ways to use more ethanol, and we think that's a good thing. You know, the cure for high RIN prices is high RIN prices. So what we've heard is concerns about this impacting bringing fuel prices up, and that it would create a drag on the economy. We don't think those are good reasons, and we've expressed that to the administration.
Okay, and Brent and Steve, would you like to?
Well, I think this is Steve. I would amplify that. I mean, the RFS has been a law for a number of years, and what we're looking for is just stick with the law and move forward. And again, as I think John said earlier, it's you know, nobody we knew a blend wall was coming years back, and you could have looked and guessed which year it would come. But the fact that we would hit a 10% level at some point was fundamental to the RFS. So that's been known. So it's no surprise. So people that didn't prepare for it shouldn't cry now.
You know, the other thing we've heard, this is Brent, that you know, some of the unions and the refineries around Philadelphia have weighed in on this thing and caused some disruption in the administration. We think that's really a weak excuse to upend this law that's been working really very well. And now that we have these cellulosic facilities coming online, we've got Eneos, Poetia, DuPont's facility will be I'm talking about the cellulosic ethanol facilities. DuPont's will be coming online soon. Abengoa's will be coming online this fall, Quad Counties. And it's just really a shame that just as these technologies are getting to commercial scale, that they'd have the rug jerked off underneath them. It's a little bit baffling.
All right, we'll leave it there. Thanks, everyone, for joining us.